This is a HeadGum Podcast.
AG1. What's up? I'm here to talk to you about AG1 Athletic Greens again. You know, it's important to me that the supplements I take are high quality, and that's why I've been taking AG1 for, what is it now, 4 years, 3.5 years or something like that? The thing I like about it is it's researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their fields. So you know it ain't BS. It's AG. They are the real deal. I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't a buzzword. They really push hard. Expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, rigorous testing. They got it all. At each step of the process, AG1 is going above and beyond. Now, what I like about them, first of all, you can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's an NSF certified for sport, which is like a rigorous independent quality. They've tested for over 950 contaminants, banned substances. The industry standard apparently is only testing for 10. Dude, it's 95 times as rigorous. And it's not complicated. It's so simple. It's just replacing health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and just one simple scoop. It takes 60 seconds. You don't have to swallow a bunch of pills on an empty stomach. Boom. And as I always say, you get a little bit of water in there too. Get that day started. So with the water, and then for me, the prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support is probably the most important ingredient. I eat a pretty varied diet, so I get my nutrition from a lot of places, but I got to eat more fermented foods. But AG1 lets me have this prebiotics and probiotics first thing in the morning, take care of my digestive enzymes, which if you're a listener of the podcast, you know I need help with. All right. Look, I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make a high quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. I chug down an AG1 maybe within 10 minutes of getting out of bed. It's the way I start my day every day, even on the road. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's DRINKAG, the number one, .com/MIGHTY. drinkag1.com/mighty.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy.
The number one fuck boy.
The number one fuck boy.
And the number one fuck boy he is.
Johnny G, joining me as always in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur is not here because my wife is doing yoga in the living room, which means he will be sitting on her mat and bothering her instead of me. Also joining me in the High and Mighty studio virtually from across the coast, I met this man doing comedy in Boston. He is fucking hysterical, and he's got serious problems, and you'll hear about them on this episode. Put your virtual fucking hands together for Alan Richardson from the Dead and Mellow label. What's up, Alan?
What's up, Gabris? Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, please. I set you up there like I was going to, like, you're like, I'm going to reveal that you're a killer.
I haven't killed anyone. I've just held on to them for longer than they wanted, and that's fine. It's just a little hole I put them in, and that's okay. I'm working on it.
I dare you to find one dead person in my past. Yes?
Find some bones down there. Fucking try it. Find some bones. Go ahead. Look around.
That's you screaming at the sheriff. Like, yeah. You know, that's going to not end well for you, Alan.
All right, listen, dude, you got a tail light out. Just go. I don't want to hear any more.
Yeah, there's no bodies. There's no body. All right, man. Please. we met when I was touring through Boston. You were at the now closed Great Scott Comedy Club, right?
Yeah, very sad. Now defunct. I walked by it for the first time the other day, and to see it without the green awning was sad.
Oh man, what's that? That place, I'd only been there that one time, but it was fucking cool as hell. And from talking to all you guys that were performing there and like have performed there, talking about what the space was and is and shit, I was like, oh, this place is so dope. And then, I mean, quarantine hit like pandemic hit like 2 weeks after I was on tour, and I was like, what the fuck? I like brewing up more weekends away and shit, and then it just all came. And then when that place closed, I was like, holy shit. I was like in the last like 40 performances at this place. Yeah. What a sad stat for the Great Scott.
No, it was a weird place because it was like it had the towny dive bar feel, but it was a big enough venue where touring acts could come through and have like a good space that's not, you know, the House of Blues or something like that.
Yeah. It had a vibe. It had a vibe a little bit where it's like, I don't know if half these people know I'm about to do a live podcast here, but they seem to be okay with it. They're like, yeah, I'm just going to gas beers over here by the bar. Go do whatever the fuck you want up there on stage.
There's like a weird towny section that's roped off almost. I'm just like, they're here. Just don't bother them and they'll be okay.
Yeah. Maybe you'll get an errant laugh, which will make your album recording sound even better. But if not, don't worry about it. Power through. There are people here in the front row who are pumped to see you. Alan, the thing we wanted to talk about, the thing we bonded about in the couple hours we were hanging out, besides weed, was bad movies. And we were talking about, because, you know, I have Action Boys and we watch a lot of what I consider good movies. Sometimes bad movies are in there. Sometimes bad movies are in there that I enjoy. I think a lot of people these days have like bad movie club, bad movie podcast, this, that, like, but what is like, I have a blanket statement that I just like movies so much that it's like, I mean, this is hack, but it's like pizza. It's like, I'm still pumped that I'm eating pizza, even if it is like a bowling alley slice, or even if it is like a 75-minute Scott Adkins direct-to-streaming, like, Japanese language action movie with, like, fake fire and fake blood. I'm still just pumped that I'm sitting down to watch a movie, and maybe I'll find 30 seconds of something enjoyable in the 90 minutes. That's a pretty solid ratio.
Yeah. It's not a lot to ask for.
Yeah, no.
That's it's one like pepperoni on a shitty pizza.
Right. One decent little cup of pepperoni with a shot of oil in it, and you're like, hell yeah. And also, like, I'm down with eating a whole shit pizza to have one decent bite. Like, I'm a disgusting glutton.
I've done it many times while watching a movie where you're like, just something good happen.
Right, yeah. It's like,
I've eaten convenience store pizza from New Hampshire, and I've watched, like, the entire Steven Seagal catalog. Yeah.
So that's a great starting point because Steven Seagal makes bad movies. But
exclusively.
He's not trying to make good movies. He's making Steven Seagal movies, which for a while were pretty cool and now are very bad.
Well, now they're insane.
Yeah, now they're bad, like, in a way. They're not good. They're bad
they're
in a
fun.
Way that isn't fun anymore. Okay, I'm glad we're on this topic because I think things could be bad, fun. Like, people are like, oh, this movie's so bad, it's good. Sometimes a movie is just bad.
Yeah, Into the Sun by Steven Seagal. That one's just bad. There's like most of his newer ones are just bad because they're slow. He can't do anything.
Right.
Nothing happens.
And he's also trying to go for quantity. So he's in a lot of these movies that are like he's in the cover of or he's in the thumbnail image. But like I just watched one called like Sniper Special Ops or something.
Yep.
And Seagal is in one room for the entire movie. And it's like written so that Seagal could just be seated in a chair being a sniper as people surround him. And then like a whole on other mission starring like 10 B actors is happening on the other B movie actors. They're not B actors necessarily. 10 B movie actors are doing a full on mission. You're like, this is not a Seagal movie. He's not part of this at all. Yeah. And then you realize it's like they shot him in 2 days, put him on the fucking cover of this movie, and he gets to like get paid.
Their whole marketing campaign was hiring Steven Seagal to be there for a day.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot like that.
That's the shit that's... And you actually see a lot more of that in the bad movie space. And I think that's...
Yeah.
Like, here's a good, solid bad movie example. I watched Escape Plan 2 and 3 recently.
Oh, geez. I haven't even seen those yet. That's with Dave Bautista's in 3, right? Or 2?
Bautista's in 2 and 3. The first one is with Arnold and Sly, and it's like fun to see them in a movie together, but it's not very good. But if you have Arnold and Sly on camera for 65% of your movie, it's objectively charismatic at least.
That movie got the best Arnold Schwarzenegger sound ever. I remember I watched that. My brothers and my dad and I all like go out to see these shitty movies all the time. And when they stuck a hose in Arnold Schwarzenegger's mouth and he just yelled with a hose in his mouth, we all looked at each other like, that's what we've been waiting for our whole lives, is to hear him screaming with a hose in his mouth.
Well, it was weirdly like a sketch comedy version of a Arnold impression. So it was like some fucking hack SNL Schwarzenegger sketch in a way. Wait, you said you go see these movies with your dad and your brothers? How many brothers do you have?
I got two. One lives in Oregon, so when he's home, we like make sure that we're going to go see whatever awful movies in theaters. I live with my younger one, so we do it constantly.
Nice. Wait, so I'm one of three boys who grew up watching action movies with, not bad movies. My dad had low tolerance for bad movies, but he was like a martial artist. So no matter how bad a movie was, if it had like a cool martial arts fight in it, he was 100% on board. Like, so he'd be like, Johnny, this is called The Perfect Weapon with Jeff Speakman, and it's fucking great. He's got sticks. He kicks people. And I'm like, and it's true. I fucking love The Perfect Weapon. But these movies are bad. Oh, so jumping to Escape Plan 1 has Sly and Arnold in it. Pretty enjoyable. Not a good movie at all. Escape Plan 2 and 3 have completely, like, a completely different cast of international it's like, it's transparently a money grab, obviously. It's like five different international, possibly Asian, I'm guessing Chinese for the market, actors. And then Stallone is in both of them for like 20-ish minutes. He's sort of like the C storyline. And him and even Batista's only got like really one arc in it, where he's like in an intro scene and two action scenes. And he doesn't... As a matter of fact, I think in both movies, definitely in Escape Plan 3, which they don't even escape from anything in, they just like
they
have to
into something.
They're like rescuing a hostage in Escape Plan 3, and in that, Batista's like, they have one scene between Batista and Stallone where he's like, I need you. And Batista's like, you know, I work alone. And they're like, well, the plan is this, this, and this. And he goes, well, I'm going to go in by myself and do something separate. It's like, okay. And it's so obviously for the shooting of just like, all right, we'll shoot Batista on Friday in this hallway. Yeah. He has this full-on own action sequence that doesn't even cross over with any of the other actors in the movie. Like, it might not have been shot in the same country. Like,
that's
it easily could be on a different stage, different cut. And I'm like, and that those are the movies that I think are bad. They're not even it's fun to laugh at them because they're bad, but I'm not seeking out I'm not seeking out a movie to mock. I'm seeking out the kind of bad I like. And now I realize I've been talking for like 40 minutes. That's what happens when you drink a cold brew and eat 20 milligrams of weed granola. But what I'm getting at is, I like a movie where everyone's intentions is to make a good movie. So it's all big fucking swings. And then it's accidentally bad. Like I would argue that's not bad. Yeah.
Right.
Like I'll always find something
Don Wilson?
Cool. Yeah. Don the Dragon Wilson.
Yeah. That's I had never heard of him. And that was like the first month of quarantine was going through all of Don the Dragon Wilson's movies.
Oh, the Blood Fist.
Blood Fist. Yes.
Which is like 40 of them, right?
there's eight of them, and only the first two are connected, and the other the other six are just random movies where he plays different people.
Stars Don Wilson, they're just gonna make it.
Gonna make it Blood Fist 8 for whatever reason.
And here's why shit like this rules. Like, this is why I like something like these Don Wilson movies is a great example. Is he is an actual kickboxer who became an actor. And that's like who they just arguably never became an actor, just started starring in movies as a kickboxer.
Just showed up on set one day.
They were like, technically you're an actor if you're in this movie. Yeah. But that's the shit I like, is when it's like that kind of stuff is exciting, because then they're bringing a different kind of energy to the set. It's like, that's why Chuck, Stallone, Chuck Norris, Seagal, Van Damme, they brought their martial arts or their fake martial arts, and they didn't have to bring much else along. Like Arnold and Sly kind of brought, you know, Sly arguably has been trying, he tries the hardest.
He's been trying the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, Arnold was like literally just hired because like, look at this freakish man.
Yeah,
like,
it's like people don't look like him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Arnold's like first major roles are like,
the quiet, silent freak in this movie, the quiet, silent freak in this movie, the badass, big, muscular, silent freak in this movie.
Arnold, just walk here to there and punch the horse. That's all you have to do.
Oh, fuck. Conan is such... Now, see, like, these Don the Dragon Wilson movies are good, a good example, because the 90s, early 90s, late 80s are like peak...
Yeah.
Peak... Or Valley, rather, bad movies, yeah. Like, however you want to look at it. It's where movies kind of, because they were making a shit ton, and yeah. They were, that's like a lot of where you get the Blood Fist 7s, the Leprechaun 5s, a lot of these movies.
It's all home movie market stuff.
Right.
You can
that's,
get everyone on that $5 rental just that once, and everyone's going to do it.
Yeah, the direct-to-video shit for people who, like, just show up at the video store every... For kids like me, show up at the video store every week and be like, all right, well, now it's time to see what Blood Fist is all about, since yeah. We've watched every other action movie in this in the fucking Hollywood Video or Blockbuster on Merrick Road.
Those yeah, we had two. A Hot Poppin' video near us. It was a
hot
was like
poppin'
hot poppin' video. It was like
HPV. That doesn't sound great. Let's go out on Friday night and hit up HPV. I'm sorry. What is this place?
You kids can each get your own HPV. All right. We would get like one VHS to watch upstairs in our room, one to watch as a family, and that was like our whole thing. For a while, it was every Planet of the Apes.
That's
I was like the only child that watched every Planet of the Apes.
I don't even think with my fucking pursuit of watching everything, I don't think I've even seen every planet. Return, Beneath, and then yeah, Battle 4,
yeah. It's Battle 4, Conquest.
Oh, right.
I think there's like five of them. There's six of them. It's insane. They get really bad after like three.
Now, see, that phrase right there is like the bad movie fans like mantra. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they get really bad after three. That means you've watched six. Yes, I've watched all six. It's like there. I have a completionist attitude too, which brought me to watch The Last Escape Plan, despite hating Escape Plan 2.
Yeah,
I was like, all right, well, there's one more out now. If another one comes out, do I watch it? Not sure. But
you're one day you're going to.
Exactly. And what, and now with the dual, quote unquote, dual screen experience, or like throwing a movie on while I do something else, that's peak bad movie territory.
Yeah. That's
peak.
Exactly what you need. That's like, I mean, that's what I miss the most about cable is you can be watching like one good show and then three bad movies all at once. You're like, oh my God, they're playing Wild Wild West and Rambo 3? Like,
Anytime Rambo 3 comes up, I have to take the opportunity to make sure anyone who doesn't know, Rambo fights alongside the Taliban. He aids the Taliban. I mean, to be fair, at the time, American foreign policy was in favor of the Taliban, but it is a very funny movie to have put on and printed in perpetuity. Be like, Rambo must fight with the Osama bin Laden. You know, like
it is. Like we rewatched all of them when Last Blood came out.
Oh man,
and that was. I don't know how recently you've watched all of them, but the one from I think it was 2008 that came
out. I
like
that one.
See, that one I rewatched it and it's not as good as I remembered. The last 20 minutes are insane.
That's what I remember. So that's because it's I tried to rewatch it recently and it is like the tension with like the Green Berets that he's working with is like the entire boat ride out and it goes on. I remember just going on for so long and I'm like, no one wants to see Rambo be like bullied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like that woman's trying to change him through the whole thing of like, well, you know, maybe you just haven't thought about it. And he's like, no, I did. And it's like, okay, we're not getting anywhere here.
It's no, not until I definitely
like,
thought
grabs
about
that
this.
Machine gun off the back of a Jeep and just turns it around.
I love he takes for the listeners, he takes a 50 cal machine gun on the back of a Jeep and puts it at the driver's head where, you know, it would be almost like, point blank range.
Put away. I was still in high school. I was a senior in high school. I skipped to go see that. I was like, I'm not going to school today. I'm going to see Rambo.
And the ending is he does rip a dude's throat out. He does get to do some cool shit, but it is a long way to go to get to that
point. It's like an hour and 10 minutes of just you waiting and waiting and waiting. That series is insane because the first movie isn't really a bad movie. It's like a really sad movie about veterans.
I was about to say, it's not even really like an action movie. It's more about like PTSD and a veteran's experience and coming home. It's closer to, you know, like Born on the 4th of July than it is to Commando, which is like First Blood.
That's a spectrum.
First Blood fucking hits hard. I mean, it's like, it's crazy. Like Brian Dennehy is like, and it's also weirdly timely in that it's, timely for 2020 in that it's like about veteran affairs, PTSD, how we treat vets, homeless people, people who are suffering through mental health issues, and then also it's about the overreaching power of local police and it's so weirdly timely to watch that movie now. It's like so fucking crazy.
And then
like
you skip right to 3.
but then Rambo 2 is like this. Rambo 2, very fun. But that is just like there's there's still POWs in Vietnam. Rambo, you got to go back and get them. We got Sensei Kreese as like a crazy ass bad guy, of course.
You know what I love about two from one to two though is like one is all about PTSD and how like unfair veterans are treated. But then the second one, the tagline just kept being like, "What you call hell, he calls home."
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, actually, Rambo loves this shit. Like, he's not tortured at all. He loves doing this.
Yeah, it is weird. He's like, I've been through something. He's like, but I'm willing to go back and shoot an explosive arrow at a helicopter if I have to. Two is awesome. Like, his body in two is like unreal. Which I believe is called First Blood Part 2, which is just funny enough as it is. Yeah. Wait, let's talk about Last Blood, because this is a movie, when I hear it's coming out, I'm thinking, this is either going to be actually good or I'm going to enjoy I'm going to enjoy something about it. Yeah, and I watch it, and it's more boring than the 2008 Rambo. It has a longer than an hour and 10 minute lead up to any action. And it includes Rambo. It has to do with the drug cartel. All of a sudden it does feel weirdly. I mean, all those movies feel a little racist because they are always like, if you're in Vietnam, so the bad guys are Asian looking. Like, it's like, I ran into an Asian person. It's like, kill them. It's like, no, wait. It could be just someone who happens to live in Vietnam, dude.
You can choose one to like, but the rest of them are no good, Rambo. Yeah.
Preferably if it's an attractive woman, you can side with her, and then the rest are bad guys. But the most Last Blood is like, feels very anti-Mexican. He like, definitely tortures people. It retcons him into being an uncle or and that all shit is so weird. And then he goes to Mexico, but then the fight ends up taking place on his farm anyway. So, and then also
it's weird. He goes to save his niece, and then she still just dies. And it's just it's like, well, God, why did you go down there then? What is this?
It's the most. It's like that fucked up Hollywood thing where it's like, she doesn't just die. The niece is kidnapped. Sold into drug addiction, sex slavery is like, and then Rambo goes to rescue these women and they don't want to leave because they're like completely Stockholm syndromed or, you know, groomed to like want to live there. He brings his daughter, he brings his niece out, and she dies on the car ride home in front of him. And it's like that Death Wish level of shit. It's like, just kidnapping your niece is enough motivation. She doesn't have to be forced to do drugs, forced to do sexual favors, then die. Like, you're justified in killing. It's a fucking action movie. And then it starts to feel like, well, this director just really wanted this story. Or like, this writer really, like, that's when you start to get sad and stressed, where you're like, wait, how badly were you fighting to have like a teen girl be raped and killed and fucking, it's like so upset.
You have to one up Taken.
Right. Well, and then that's the problem too, is that when they take this part so seriously, the action, you can't like enjoy it in a pet, like the way we're talking about. You can't be like, it's not Blood Fist because you're like, oh, this is fun. It's like, no, a teen girl is sex trafficking and drug addiction is a real, like, it's like, don't bring too much real world drama into a movie that's eventually going to be like a full flight fantasy about.
That's not what we liked about Rambo.
Well, it is weird because it is what.
And his first blood is like serious, and then it's like Rambo like heightens off that, and you're like, okay. Then it's like, no, we're also going to address a serious fact in Last Blood, and it's sex trafficking. It's like, no, no, no. Sylvester, trust
You've
me.
You've already gone too far.
Trust me when I say a 65-year-old millionaire maybe doesn't have the best take on this. Like, might not be the most informed on this issue.
We were getting, I remember when that came out, my brother and I were really anxious because it was like watching the trailer. It was like, is this going to be just him and white nationalists fighting Mexicans the whole time? Like, is that, is this, like, it was like, I felt like, is this like a weird Trump's America Rambo now?
Yeah, well, that is part of it too. And well, all right, now you're opening, this is more about action movies, but bad movies are often action movies as well.
That's the easiest one to make a fun bad movie, I think.
I think it's because they make money internationally, you know what I mean? And some of our biggest, like, you know, names that sell tickets and DVDs are action stars, obviously.
Well, and it's like, you know, a bad horror movie's not going to scare you. A bad comedy's not going to make you laugh. But a bad action movie, shit still explodes.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, too. It's like action and horror, more so than comedy, are design like a little easier to go international, because it's like you don't care about the subtext of the jokes and stuff when it's just like cut his fucking head off with a machete. It's like a lot of the dudes and the people behind the scenes and the premises of the movies, but and the stars, in hindsight, I was watching a shit ton of right-wing propaganda.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, like, what else is Red Dawn?
I know. So many movies we watched growing up were like, white guy with a gun finally kills all the foreign criminals in his neighborhood or whatever. It's like, oh my God, Death Wish is exactly that. It's like, he's like,
yeah. You keep calling a bleeding heart liberal. Is that what they keep calling him?
Yes, they call him a pacifist. And he's like a conscientious objector. He's supposed to be like a pacifist. And it's like, he's blowing away. By the end of Death Wish 2, like, he's shooting like a purse snatcher in the back with a magnum. It's like, isn't like exactly like cleaning up the streets, dude.
Isn't that like the first time he goes to kill somebody, like pretends to cry, then he just pulls out like the gun out of the
But there's so many of these movies you grew up watching where it's like, well, the only thing that could stop this is a cop who lives outside the law. Yeah. He'll handcuff the suspect and beat his fucking ass till he gets. Yeah. And it's like, wait, all the shit that I'm now against, like police overextending the power of the federal government, police brutality, like overseas involvement via the military, all the shit that I'm like, this is fucked up, is all the shit of movies I was watching. And it had to have had an effect on society where it's like, soft power, drone, the Navy SEALs are fucking cool, man. They'll rescue anyone. It's like, but they're also like, you know, renditioning fucking high targets and shit like that. Who knows what else is going on?
Yeah, they take none of the consequences, but all of like the, it's like how you can make a conspiracy theory of just like, laying out the outside of it. And like, no, it's cool. They go over there, they blow stuff up, they chop people's heads off.
Right.
Don't ask why. It doesn't matter why.
Yeah, it doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter what, like, financial incentive the American government is receiving through this fucking damage and drama and bloodshed that they're doing.
Every post-credit scene is them drilling for oil afterwards. And
right, right. Well, like, we were able to liberate the POWs, and now we are able to put oil derricks here and help to have them build us smartphones. It's like, wait, what? That would be a really fun like web series or some like series of shorts, is like interject videos of like the government officials in action movies being like, well, once we get the president off of Air Force One, then we'll be able to sell more phones.
New alternate endings for all these classic films.
Yeah. I feel like recently that has been like the premise of some action movies, is like corrupt governments. And like, for the longest time, it was always like bureaucratic red tape was the problem.
Yeah.
And now part of me is like, let's put some more red tape around like invasions and like police stuff. Like, maybe red tape isn't as bad as Riggs would have had me believe. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's a fucking psychopath police officer. He's like crashed cars and shit. Like, I'm literally in the streets protesting this guy, but 20 years ago, I was paying to see that movie in the theater multiple times.
Yeah, you like you pause Lethal Weapon 4 to go to a protest and like, I can't wait to finish this. You turn to try to tell someone about what you've been watching. You're like, you know what? Never mind. I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah, you're not going to like this.
Hey there, high and mighty listeners. For over 100 years, Trico has been the leader in innovation and ingenuity for everything wiper blades. Trico is the first to mass produce wiper blades, and they have received numerous awards from vehicle manufacturers who trust Trico to put the best product on their vehicles. One of their products, the Trico Neoform, is designed to match your vehicle's exact connection. That means no more guessing, no more hassle, and no more confusion while installing your wiper blades. Not only are they easy to install, but they are high-quality beam blades built to beat any type of weather. That's right, they are high-quality beam blades built to beat any type of weather. Trico Ultra Wiper Blades are American-made premium wiper blades that shine in any weather. These wiper blades are also feature a unique design that converts wind force into extra pressure, allowing for maximum windshield contact. The Trico Smart Set Wiper Blades automatically pairs the correct size and fit wiper blades specific to your vehicle. That is, two wiper blades sized perfectly with the correct connection already attached. Simply visit wipers123.com, enter your vehicle information, and select whichever smart set you prefer. Trico Smart Set Monsoon for areas with heavy rainfall, Trico Smart Set Tundra for cold, snowy areas, and Trico Smart Set Storm for everything in between. Go to wipers123.com and use promo code MIGHTY at checkout and receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more. That's wipers123.com, promo code MIGHTY at checkout and receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more.
Do you have any particular genre of bad movies, or like if it's action or sci-fi, like within that, are there some tropes and stuff of some of these bad movies that you really enjoy? Like, there's something like, oh, this is in every movie and I like this, like, or something like this is in a lot of these movies.
I'm a big fan of like more like kung fu movies and that, and martial art films, because it's more, it always ramps up to get to be ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Rambo, they're just going to get bigger guns, but eventually you're going to see like Dolph Lundgren or someone get stabbed 15 times in a scene, but have no like effect on them.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff I like. Just they're randomly invincible, but then like one shot to the calf will make them fall down.
Yeah. Like the narrative damage of their body, where it's like you've taken like 12 like baseball bats to the dome, but because you need to like hurt your ankle when you jump off this ledge for the sake of the story, that happens now. You're like, that hurt? Like, I'm always surprised by that. The big thing for me in those action movies is when like the bad guy's right-hand man is always some total badass that the protagonist has to square off against. But then when they beat that guy, it's always like a pretty solid name, older actor who's the main villain. And it's like, well, now Scott Atkins has to fist fight Michael Douglas or whatever. And it's like, I'm not worried about Scott Atkins in this fight. Like, I was more worried when he fought the like voiceless Bulgarian bodybuilder in the previous scene. But then just because narrative-wise, it's like John Wick, even though not a bad movie and more of a modern movie, it suffers from that too. After he defeats everyone in John Wick 1, he's got to fight like the old gang leader, and it's like, this isn't scary.
Yeah.
He fucking fought 1,000 guys. Like, what's one old man? The old man who, he's the leader of the mafia. He doesn't have the powers to like
fight. Yeah, you've already beaten him.
Yeah.
Now it's just like cutting an old guy's head off. That's
right.
John Wick and those movies are interesting, where it's just like people that have learned what's good about a bad movie and how to make it into like a decent movie. Because like on paper, John Wick is absurd.
Yeah, it's like the premise is dumb. It's like, but it's executed well. It's got like the bad movie template of like they fucked with the wrong guy's dog. You know what I mean? And then it's like, but because they do like interesting modern choreography, interesting modern DP, like lighting, cinematography, music, Keanu, combat style, like, and sort of like the one thing they do that not a lot of action movies do is justify why they're not always using guns. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's, like, Lone Wolf McQuade, a recent movie I watched for Action Boys, has Chuck in, like, justifiable fist fight situations and justifiable gun situations. I feel like some bad movies are like, wait, why is he not shooting these guys? If he's like, yeah. He had his gun. You're like, okay, well, like, we talk about it on Action Boys, Seagal does this a lot. Put your gun down, tough guy, huh? Still a tough guy without your gun? And it's like, all right, well, now you're a NYPD hand-to-hand combat against 12 guys. Like, shoot 8 of them, you fucking idiot.
I always love Steven Seagal stuff now where it's always that same like angle right up at his chin when he's doing the fighting. You know what I mean? Yes, exactly. Just waving his arms around. And he's got like a hard double chin going every time. Like, I don't like this.
Right, right. It's sort of POV of the other guy's POV so that it looks like it's...
Yeah.
I did some Jeet Kune Do. I've done martial arts. And I feel like it's like an energy flow drill when you have your hands together. It's like a way to learn like how... And it's more of a drill than actual combat. But Seagal puts that shit in all of his movies. Where he's got the full lean back noodle arm shit where he's in like a fucking silk kimono and he's just going like, it's very Mo Larry and Curly energy that he's doing again. Well,
did you ever hear about on, he made that movie On Deadly Ground where it's, in that, do you know this, when he got choked out and allegedly shit his pants on set?
Oh, by like the famous stuntman who,
I forget who he was, the guy that like that taught Bruce Lee how to like grappling and stuff. It's Gene something.
Oh yeah, Gene. Fuck. It's like Gene Liddell or something. It's not that. It's Gene LaBelle.
And he was in a Don Wilson movie.
Yeah, he had like a bit awesome part.
Yeah, that guy rules. But I guess it was like Steven Seagal said that he can get out of any chokehold.
Yeah,
and so Gene put him in a chokehold, and then Steven Seagal hit him in the balls. From one of the interviews.
The one I heard is Seagal, he choked Seagal passed out, shit himself, woke up and had to pay off like everybody that was around to never talk about it.
So what I heard was he was getting choked, but that was his technique of how to get out of a chokehold, was he just hit that guy Gene in the nuts, and that guy got so pissed off, that's when he choked him out.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, right, because he would be like, this is how I get out. And he wails him in the dick, and the guy's like, well, fuck you. Now I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, now you're dead. And that movie, that's like, I don't know, it's the difference between like why I love a Dolph Lundgren film versus Steven Seagal is so different. Where Steven Seagal, I just want to watch him be a piece of shit because he is such like an awful person.
Right. Well, he's one of the people whose like real life has... flavored his movies, but not ruined them, where you're just like, this garbage asshole, let's see what movie... Like, Chuck Norris's like right-wing politics stuff kind of bother me a little bit and make me have a hard time watching his movies. But Seagal is like such a level of scum, but he is like that in his movies too, so it's slightly more enjoyable for whatever reason.
Yeah, because everything's cranked up to a 10 with him, so it's like, it's more like, I could watch him fail right now.
Yeah, right? It's kind of fun to watch Seagal bomb. Like, his movies for the long... like, and rewatching his successful movies, they were always like, Seagal fights Jamaicans, Seagal fights Italians, Seagal fights poachers, Seagal fights blank. Like, insert blank, and it was... The fucking Jamaicans one is hard because it is just like a white dude killing black guys and some not so black guys in Rasta makeup or whatever. And it's like, yo, not cool.
Yeah, that one, that was above the law or out for a kill?
Out for justice.
Out for justice.
Above the law. It's hard to remember because they're all three word titles.
Yeah,
so they kind of blend
nonsense together.
My favorite is Hard to Kill. That's the one where you could take that to the bank, the blood bank, where he dies ostensibly and then comes back to life and then like fucks Kelly LeBrock.
Well, that's like another thing in On Deadly Ground where he dies and comes back to life, and then I think he like has sex with that old witch woman. They're like, they're all like naked, giving him like a weird ritual to bring him back to life.
And I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
There's a scene where he jumps on the back of a bear and stabs it. It gets really weird for like 15 minutes of it.
And that's the one with Michael Caine.
Yep, as the evil oil driller in Alaska.
Well, oh, so I'm getting On Deadly Ground potentially confused with Fire Down Below is the next year. And oh, it's yeah. And that's an EPA representative. That one has Kris Kristofferson instead of Michael Caine, and it's a coal mogul instead of an oil tycoon. They call it stolen valor when a dude wears like an army outfit. Yeah. Whatever the stolen Native American valor is what Seagal's been doing for fucking 30 years. He's been pretending to have some sort of Native American vibe to himself.
That's his whole career is stolen valor. Incredible to watch.
Well, yeah, he's also like arguably like there's been no proof that he's an Aikido master or whatever. You know what I mean? Like
there's that one video online of him like doing a demonstration.
Oh, I love like why is he so into Russia? Like, of course he is. Like, of course he's like in with Putin and doing demonstrations over there. And like as the second he can't, like the second people in America are like, hey, we're calling you out for being a little bit of a freak and a weirdo and this. He's like, peace out. I'm going to Russia where they worship me because I was in like 11 movies they like.
Because they're not sure what's fiction over there. And it's like Putin likes me. He thinks this is real.
Right.
But then you get like Dolph Lundgren, who that guy's life is so baffling to me. You know?
I mean, he's in such bad movies, but he's like a true...
He's like a genius.
Yeah. He's got like a dual doctorate, and he is like an Olympic level martial artist too.
Yeah.
And he got discovered from just fucking Grace Jones.
Oh, really?
He was like a doorman at a bar or a club, and Grace Jones saw him there and was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, and started like hooking up with him or started dating him. And then she was like, yo, Arnold, you got to meet this guy. I'm dating Dolph Lundgren. It's like so fucking cool.
I recently watched He-Man for the first time, which I think was like one of his first
Universe. Yeah.
Yeah. That movie is fucking ridiculous.
I grew up watching He-Man. The movie is so confusing, but the fact that Frank Langella plays Skeletor,
yeah, it's we're watching and we're like, who is this for, and how did they land here?
Yeah,
like makes sense that it was like, well, we can't do this in that land. Like it has to be in America because we can't afford all these sets for everything.
We can't shoot exclusively in Eternia, so we have to get He-Man and Gwildor, a character created for this. Yeah. The Masters of the Universe is a canon movie, and if you want to talk bad movies with a sense of style, canon movies just got it figured out for me.
They had it down.
Their action movies are great. Their non-action movies are fucking weird. Their attitude of what they like about movies is a lot of what I like, with the exception of those, like, Golan and Globus always insert some sort of, like, foreign policy shit that I don't understand or agree with in their movies. It's like, well, if American interests would just get out of Lithuania, then Israel. And I'm like, okay, I understand that this might actually be topical to 1984 or important to the Israeli film producers behind this. But to me, all I want to see is Chuck Norris shooting fucking missiles off his motorcycle.
Don't change the speed on me like that. I can't handle that.
Is the thing we like about these bad movies is like the suspension of disbelief is... You have to kind of, as part of enjoyment of these movies, you have to suspend a major disbelief, like in a way where you have to be like, yeah, I understand I'm watching a movie and I understand that there'd be no way to aim the mortar that's on the back of a motorcycle that you're driving through Beirut. But if Chuck Norris can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, it's the best. It's like a real hard escapism of like, this is clearly not real life. I'm going to live here for a minute because this is way more fun and crazy and like anything is possible. And you can always put yourself in the shoes of a hero. That's like, I can get shit done. I can do whatever I need to do.
Right. Well, there's an element to it of like, you watch, you know what you're in for with this act. Like when you read comics and you're like, you don't just sit there and go like, eventually fans of comics stop going, how does Lois not know that that's Clark Kent? Eventually you just go like, yeah, we get it. The glasses and the hair curl are enough. It's confusing. But
then
like,
you start getting annoyed anytime anyone else asks it of like, just shut the fuck up. You don't mention that. Yeah. You just like,
we know. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like that with action movies. It's like, what, is it really safe to have that many grenades in your jacket pocket? And it's like, you can't, you're like, how does he have all these weapons? How can, like, how much ammo does he have? It's like, that's stuff we don't bother with.
Yeah. Like, we, I remember, like, as a kid getting scared by the Punisher, the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I thought cars exploded that easily. I was like, is that what happens? Like, if you crash in one of their car, your car is just going to explode? Because I think there's one where it's like a motorcycle and a van go head to head into each other. And it's like the moment the tire hits the bumper, they both just explode. And as a kid, I was like, I can't believe like people are driving around like this. This is not good.
That is such a funny kid fear of just like, well, if you touch a bumper, and I think I've seen that in like a Hot Shots or like a action movie parody where a car just dink and then it explodes, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is part of it. You have to understand, like, I'm putting on an action movie. It speaks a certain language. You're going to wonder why the bad guys are coming one at a time. Like, that's like, but that's what we're watching now. That's
they're
what
taking
we're in
turns
for.
Because that's what people do. That's what gangs do, is they take turns fighting. Or else it's not going to be fun for anyone.
My favorite element of action movies, one of my favorite things about action movies, bad ones in particular, that I like to discuss is the bad guy's plans really not making sense when you start to lay it out. When you're like, okay, so follow me here. Eric Bogosian wants to take the train into dark territory so that he can take over the satellites and he can't be unhacked, blah, blah, blah. Like, all this shit where you're, like, trying to explain what's going on and you're like, what the fuck am I even talking like? And then, like, the idea that the bad guy's plans are so complicated that the bad guy is restating them multiple times throughout the movie. Like, I love shit like that. Yeah. That shit makes me laugh hardcore.
Yeah, they're constantly like, all right, let me explain this one more time. This is my very diluted plan to get like $1 million.
Right, right. Like, that's always really fun. It's like, and then from there, we'll be able to make $1,000 a week for life or whatever. You're like, wait, what is this? Just get a job teaching.
Just get a second job, guys. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it is always like, if you sold all the guns that you bought your and the henchmen salaries and the cars you have in this Broken Arrow, like all the Jeeps, if you sold all that, you might be just like $100 million below your end goal.
Yeah. Like, how much did it cost you to clear out a piece of the jungle 3 miles away from the road? Like, whatever that team cost to keep quiet and excavate for you,
invest
that could have been it.
Just take that movie and put it in a high yield investment.
Don't build a lair, build a condo. And now you're a real evil genius.
Right. Yeah, be a landlord, the most evil of all geniuses who actually make more money than most criminal masterminds.
Yeah, which is with a beautiful, like, that's pretty much what Dredd's about, right?
Right.
Which is that one, the one evil tower.
So modern bad movies are a whole nother thing. And I think we should take this chance, like, we both like bad movies, but you've done something very particularly weird with it. And
I've gone full with a bad movie.
Yeah, like, sometimes you watch a current bad movie or a movie that has such a big swing behind it that it's crazy that it is bad, but also you can say, of course that was bad. And so if you imagine, like, a property like, say, Dr. Seuss's Cat in the Hat, an actor like, say, Mike Myers, and you put together and make a fucking Cat in the Hat movie. And why don't you tell the high and mighty listeners, why don't you tell the shitheads a little bit about what's happening?
So
over
today,
in your world.
Today I'm on day 337 of watching the Cat in the Hat every day for a year. So you're watching
the Mike Myers Cat in the Hat movie.
The 2003 live action Cat in the Hat film. It's insane because it's all good people that worked on it, all like good actors and writers.
Dakota Fanning's in that movie, right? And she's like insanely talented.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning, Alec Baldwin, during a real good valley of Alec Baldwin. He's on the director. They made a director's commentary for it, and I don't know who it's for, but it's Alec Baldwin, and the director is Bo Welch, who I didn't really know the name of, but he did like all of Tim Burton's set design. For like every major Tim Burton. He's an Academy Award winner. And he directed The Cat in the Hat. And then it's like, I forget the third guy's name, but it's Jeff Schaefer and Alec Berg that wrote it. And that is just insane because they're, you know, they're showrunners on Veep, on Barry, on Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, they've written some of the best comedy that there's been, and they wrote The Cat in the Hat.
Well, now you're describing one of the possible situations that creates a very bad movie is a lot of like muscle and fame and high powered people with an IP, like with a property like this, and a lot of big swings. And I'm assuming the studio is banking on this in some capacity. They're like, it's going to be huge.
Well, because it was right after The Grinch.
Right. And The Grinch was huge.
Yeah.
Right.
Because The Grinch, I think it cost like $98 million or $90 million, and then it made like $300 million. So they dumped, I think, $108 million into The Cat in the Hat, and it barely made it back. And it's just bad. They got every Dr. Seuss's widow banned any future live-action Dr. Seuss movies because of it.
I have watched it once, like whatever, 15 years ago. I cannot revisit it. What does one gain on like viewing 300 of this movie? Like, what does one take away from it at that point?
Absolutely nothing. At this point, it's like I'm noticing what extra is looking at who and like who's behind the camera and like where extras are staring at it. And it's just weird stuff like transitions you don't notice, but then you're like, oh no. And sometimes I took a bunch of mushrooms one day and watched it, and I couldn't stop looking at Mike Myers' mouth the whole time. And I because he didn't want to do the movie at all. He
That's a wild ass layer.
Oh yeah, that's why I did it. That's so the whole reason I'm watching The Cat in the Hat is I got really into like marathon kind of comedy, and like the Comedy Bang Bang when they went on tour. By the end of that tour, you can hear how just like brain dead they've all kind of gone, and the comedy kind of changes because it's the three of them doing, you know, like 3 hours a night sitting next to each other and not seeing anyone else.
And then I've been on a few of those shorter versions of those tours, and then it's driving in a car with the same people, then going out to dinner with the same people.
And you can hear it change on stage because your brain's just going in all these different directions. And then we did, so building off of that, I did, actually it was 2 years ago tomorrow from recording this, I did a 24-hour comedy show, and we did like a podcast every 6 hours just to mark like where we are. And like by the end of it, it's just like me eating fluff, screaming into a microphone and be like, look what it does in my mouth. And like answering questions as Fluff Guy. And that was a wild day.
That is a fun like the survival comedy kind of world. Like my buddy Gil watched every episode of Entourage back to back to back and streamed it on Funny or Die. And,
reason I'm doing The Cat in the Hat is because I saw he did that and I was like, well, what the fuck? I can't do a marathon longer than Entourage. Like,
right.
You know, like your brain just can't stay up that long. And so
I think you found a solid version of it. So do you have like a process? Is it like the same time every day because I would feel like it would start to get to like, oh fuck, it's 6 p.m. I guess I got to put this movie on and record an episode. Yeah.
If I have time in the morning, I try to wake up and watch it and get it over with. Cause I do a daily podcast for it after every single one. And sometimes it's just me alone. All right,
here's a whole nother layer. Yeah. You're doing even just doing a podcast every day would make me want to blow my fucking head off.
Yeah.
No less watching a movie and then doing a podcast every day. The same movie every day.
Some Jesus episodes Christ. Are just songs I've made while watching it. Like I have a little synthesizer next to me and I'll just be watching it.
Yeah, I know. One I watched was just an animation as like The Cat in the Hat on.
Oh, did you watch that?
I watched the animation, yeah.
Yeah, that one, that was just, I was like, hey, you know, I'll just see if I can draw a cartoon in an hour and a half before the movie's done.
And you did.
Yeah, and then the song from that one was another one I did like a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of weeks before that. But like, was it last week? I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere with the movie, and I was getting frustrated with, like, what else am I going to talk about, or how else am I going to, like, change the experience? And I don't know why I ended up doing it, but I had the idea of watching The Cat in the Hat while only listening to Escape, the Pina Colada song. And, like, it's gotten to be that, like what else can I possibly do
so
here?
You put the movie on mute and blast the Pina Colada song and watch a full... And this movie's 100 minutes, right? It's like a
no,
full...
it is. This movie is a pathetic length of 76 minutes.
Oh, that's okay. That's
a
victory.
Saving grace. Yeah,
it's only an hour and 16 minutes.
Yeah,
holy shit!
It's clearly so, like, no one liked it.
Wait, and so sorry. Jump back. Myers didn't want to be in it. He didn't want to do it. You were saying?
So they were going to make a Sprockets movie.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I mean, he decided to stop and didn't want to do it, but the studio sued him for breach of contract for trying to leave the Sprockets movie, and he was going to get fined $3.8 million. And then they, I'm blanking on the name, Imagine wanted to do The Cat in the Hat because they had just done The Grinch, and they were like, well, what if you did The Cat in the Hat and you didn't pay us $3.8 million? So you, when you're watching The Cat in the Hat, you're watching someone
blackmailed
in this cat suit. Yeah.
Like, what's the word? Extorted into doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, so that's like when the dad took mushrooms and couldn't stop staring at his face, realizing, like, oh, there's a human being in there that is just miserable. And there's like a lot of articles I found where people were saying that on set he was miserable to work with. He wouldn't leave his trailer until, like, he absolutely had to come onto the set. And it was just stuff like that. So it's just like, it's such a weird movie of no one seemed to want to do it and no one seemed to enjoy it.
The costuming, the face is terrifying in The Cat in the Hat. Is like, it's, oh my God. I'm just like, it's haunting just looking at it right now.
It's not fun.
No, and I could see how the mouth would be like, I'm truly distracted. I like haven't thought about this movie in a long time. And I can't even imagine, you're on day 300-ish of watch, 330-ish,
37,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is like, we're recording this in mid-August. This episode will probably come out by the end of August, early September. You're coming down the home stretch of having watched it.
Yeah.
You've watched it over 300 times already.
Yeah, there are people that have listened to my podcast that, like, well, they'll listen to it, like, they've messaged me, like, I listen to this this is my morning routine, and it's like, thank you for doing this during quarantine, because now it's, like, something I have every morning, and a few of them still have never watched the movie, and it's just like, well, what do you think of when you listen to this?
Like, oh, that's so weird. I mean, that's funny that they say that to you, who... in a way has found something to do in quarantine.
Yeah.
like you're like, if you think you found something to do, you should try watching a 76 minute movie and then figuring out what to say about it every day.
And that it was like, it's been such what a fucking year to watch The Cat in the Hat every day too. Cause I watched this, I came home from tour last September.
Base level fucking trauma going on around the world, like what we're all going through. You're like, and now also like give myself the fucking Clockwork Orange, like Ludovico treatment.
That
and
is radicalized.
Yeah, like I'm radicalized by watching The Cat in the Hat every day. Has anything from the movie like entered your lexicon? Is there an actor with a small part who you now have a newfound appreciation for? Is any positive come out? I mean, besides like, you're making content that people enjoy, because you have a Patreon or a way to subscribe to this podcast, which we'll plug at the end here. But like, has anything come out for you that makes this like appealing in any way? Like that when you watch the movie, have you figured out a way to find a new enjoyment level out of it, or something came from it? Like besides, like it's almost like you want to be like, to me, this is practically like running a marathon where you're like, if you can do this, you can do anything.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell people that this is just like running a marathon, so don't think I can.
well, in all honesty, if you took 76 minutes a day to work on running in any capacity, you'd be a marathon runner in 3 months.
So that's like what this whole thing has been, is like there were 2 months where I worked out every day while watching The Cat in the Hat. And it just became like 76 minutes of the day. I sit here. I like, I'll lift weights in my room. I'll do push-ups or whatever. And I'll just work out while I watch it. And this is my workout time. And then eventually you get sick of working out. You're like, okay, I'm gonna draw for 76 minutes while I watch The Cat in the Hat. So like, if anything,
it's sort of been your activity hour in a good way. Yeah.
This has gotten me to learn how to like really manage my time. Cause I know there has to be about 2 hours a day where I get to my computer. I watch it. I record like a, you know, usually they go between like 5 to 20 minute episodes. Because I don't think anyone wants an hour long podcast every day. And also, what the fuck am I going to talk about this movie for an hour? But then the other fun thing was like when, you know, shows were still happening, I could perform live on comedy shows. And like I did a few sets as The Cat in the Hat.
Yeah, where, that's one of the videos I watched too, which was really The Cat in the Hat's poetry about joining Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or whatever.
That was us just improving. We wanted to be like a Tom Waits, if Tom Waits was Cat in the Hat. And like the only thing we had planned for it was we want the cat to admit he was in Vietnam. And at the end, we want to do the Meat Puppet song. Because that I do a lot of, I tour around with the guy playing guitar on stage with me during that. We tour around as a very sad man, which was pretty much that act, but not as The Cat in the Hat. But it was like, it's fun to go to a show and you do like, you know, a showcase in the city or something. You only have 10 minutes and just be like, I've been watching The Cat in the Hat every day for 250 days. Who's got a question about it? And then just hearing people like hearing the different random people react to their first thing of like, you're doing what? So like that was really fun.
It is a great way to get like, if when I didn't have any credits, it'd always be like I did a sketch on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. So it'd be like from Late Night with Conan O'Brien, John Gabriel, and be like, that's very misleading.
Yeah.
But when you don't if you don't have a lot of credits, someone could say he's been watching Cat in the Hat for the last 200 straight days. Put your hands together for Alan. It's like you can come out and be like, people are like, wait a minute, tell me more.
The only thing I've been doing with it is I've been tweeting at Alec Berg, who is he was the only person I tweeted at pretty much everyone that was in the movie for a while, just because I was trying to tweet at people and email whoever I can. Like, someone has to explain this movie to me as to why it happened, because no one seems to want it.
On day 150, you're like, on like day 150, you're like, okay, well, it would be great to talk to someone that worked on, like, to get like some more level.
I've been watching this movie alone in my room for 5 months now.
Time to get a little more in depth if I can.
And so I've tweeted at Alec Berg, and I don't know what, I think at first I think he thought I was like not all there mentally, and he was kind of being nice about it. But then he slowly was just like, started being like, you're batshit nuts. You're going to end up in a loony bin. I don't know what's wrong with you. And so like I released an album in January and I put out another one in July. And both of them, I just got to use an Alec Berg quote of Alan Richardson is absolutely batshit nuts. And it's like, it's a quote he said about me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so that's like that's my.
What else do you need in life?
I asked him once. I was like, I think I'm gonna, because before the whole pandemic happened, I was gonna be out in LA, like probably around this time. And I told him, I was like, hey, I'm gonna be near you at some point this year. Would you ever meet up in a public place to talk about The Cat in the Hat for 5 minutes? And he responded with, "Are you gonna kill and eat me?" And I just told him, I was like, there's only one way to find out. There's.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So that's why gun sales have gone up in the Hollywood Hills. Well, yeah, that's why we're doing High and Mighty on Zoom, because you were supposed to be out here. We were going to get together live and hear more about this adventure. But I appreciate you coming on fucking High and Mighty, dude. It's been a minute since I saw you.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate you having me.
Of course, man. Of course. So where can people find the Cat in the Hat podcast or whatever?
So if you want like the full experience, you can go to patreon.com/giveme attention.
The podcast is called Give Me Attention, right?
Because it was a lot of other things. And then it just kind of slowly became like, I only have the energy to do the Cat in the Hat right now. So like, I'm excited when this project's over to move on to some other projects and stuff.
And do you think your next project will be like a endurance-based project or no?
Not like this. I think the next thing I want to do is I want to watch every James Bond movie in a row.
Oh, I like that.
That's fun. Like 50 hours.
It's a little easier.
Yeah. I want to do that. I had the other idea of watching a season of The Simpsons every day for a month because there's 31 seasons right now. So that's like the perfect thing of like, it's like 9 hours a day. You watch The Simpsons and you just do that for a month straight and then it's over with. But I also have a free feed, Give Me Attention or Give Me Death, that's available anywhere you get podcasts. And I do have a few select Cat in the Hat episodes in there. And all my other marathons are on there. I did 24 hours of conspiracy theory videos. Or my friend and I locked ourselves in my room and took mushrooms and just watched conspiracy theory videos for a day straight. And in one of the episodes, I believe that Richard Nixon faked the moon landing and have to get talked down about it. There's another one of that feed where I watch every Police Academy movie in a row. That was like the first one I did.
By the way, this is like exactly in our wheelhouse, Alan, of like, yeah, we're into endurance shit. What do you do? Oh, I watch like 9 hours of TV back to back.
Yeah, it's still smoke like weed, watch TV.
Well, like that's like me. It's August 2020 and I'm like, I should get into streaming on Twitch. And my wife's like, what makes you want to do that? And I'm like, well, I smoke weed and play video games for 3 hours a day. I wonder if I could 1 hour a day let people watch.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
Right?
You're like, I am going to watch Cat in the Hat every single day anyway. Might as well record a podcast. Yeah.
This was all I was doing. I might as well start telling people I'm doing it for a year. And I am gonna have a release of it called My Year with the Cat once this is all over, and that's gonna be up on deadamello.com, which is a I run a label. It's mostly comedy. We do some music. We just released like this new punk band that came out, Circus Battalion, and I have a few albums on the website. We got Rob Crean, who ran the comedy shows of the Gas, has two albums out on there.
Oh, cool. But,
yeah, that's my that's our little label.
Dead and Mellow is the label, and yep. Honestly, maybe the future of artist support and survival is indie labels and small labels and shit like that. So much appreciated you doing that.
We're moving on to like, we're doing sketch comedy now and stuff. We have an audio sketch album coming out and that's
awesome.
I don't like, you know, the Zoom shows, they're just not, it's not the same as like a live performance. And I'm just kind of waiting that out and just doing comedy in different ways. So everything kind of turns back on safely.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I'm like, I'll just keep podcasting and then, but I'm craving live performance. I'm dying to like get, I'm like, I'm going to dive full into like solo performance stand-up shit when I'm done here. When I'm done here, meaning when COVID-19 is done here.
Well, that was, I saw you when you did that second show at Great Scott. It was just you ranting at the audience.
That's been a fun, I did that on tour a few times where I'm like, I don't really have an hour, but I could definitely talk to a crowd for an hour. Let's see if they could talk. And that was, by the end of that show, the audience was like, you were talking about that. I kept being like, wait, what was I talking about?
That was
about
so then? Much fun to just watch people be like, finish that other thread.
Yeah, don't forget. Remember, did you end up getting the Transformers or whatever? I was like, oh, right. People DM'd me after that show. Was like, hey, you never actually got around to finishing this one story. And me and my friend are curious the ending. I was like, oh God, what a nightmare. And on social media, you're at 10 Gallon Mr. Allen on Instagram. Yep. If people want to follow you there. And do you have Twitter?
10 Gallon Mr. Allen on Twitter. You can also follow Dead and Mello on Instagram.
Nice. I'll tag you in all this when the episode drops. But Alan, I appreciate you coming on High and Mighty, man. This
is Gabers,
fun.
Thanks for having me, man. This was a blast.
I'm down to do some version of a Zoom endurance something or a guest on one of your shits as well. So let me know. Let me know if you want me to come on towards the end and finally watch Cat in the Hat and talk to you.
Dude, that
about
would be
it.
Great if you'd finally watch the Cat in the Hat and we can discuss it. That'd be so much fun.
Email. I mean, this. There's no need for this to be on the actual episode of the podcast. But email me or DM me, and let's fucking talk about it. I'll come on. I'll watch. I'll get ripping high, watch the movie, and then talk to you about it.
That sounds like a blast, man.
I'm at Gabrus on all social media. Check out my other podcasts, Action Boys at actionboys.biz with a Z. And as always, bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.